All right, and we got rookie camp today. First day of rookie mini camp. 2 days today and tomorrow. Omar Kelly joins us this morning. And Omar, how'd you like getting up early every morning, my man?
For you, Joe, anything.
Oh, thank you.
It's such an honor to fill in for you, Joe. I don't want to rub it in, but you know you're a legend around here.
I don't know about all that stuff, Omar. You're too much, man. You're too nice. Hey, let's get into what you're expecting to see from all the new guys today. Going to be kind of get an idea how they're going to be used as the team's now had a chance after spending a lot of time with them going through this whole process of the draft and or even picking them up as rookie free agents. What are you looking for in these first 2 days?
Really, all you get to see is you're able to size them up because, you know, it's things have changed over the years, Joe, to the point where rookie draft picks don't even participate in rookie camp because it's filled with tryout guys and nobody wants their draft picks to get hurt by a tryout guy. So it's really that rookie camp is about teaching these young players what feels to go to when the whistle blows, the body mechanics that they want them to do the drills with. So we're just going to really get a gauge of testing of athleticism. And for me, the biggest thing I got to see is I got to see some of these sizes. You know, is Caden Proctor, is he big or is he heavy big? You know, is Michael Taft the size of a nickel cornerback, or does he look like a real legitimate safety? Same thing with Kyle Lewis. Is he a linebacker size player, or is he really a player that can transition to safety? Does he have the speed to play safety? I know he timed in I think he was a 4.5, like 1 or 4.53 guy. That's safety speed, but does he move that way when he's going laterally? So those kind of things you're trying to look for, and probably some of the defensive ends, you know, Max, I can't even say what his last name
Llewellyn.
Is, and Llewellyn Mason Rager, an undrafted guy who was a priority undrafted free agent. Can any of those guys help you set the edges? Because right now, I think that's the biggest concern I have for the Dolphins.
Yeah, that's an interesting one with the pass rushers, obviously important. And they got some guys that, you know, 6'5", 250 to 260, like you said, mm-hmm. Rager and Llewellyn and a guy they even drafted higher than that of the guys, plus the veteran guys that will be coming back that have had some success and trying to keep mm-hmm. their careers going. But that's kind of what this whole thing's going to be about, isn't it? Like veteran guys that signed on the cheap coming here to try to get their careers going again, or these guys trying to have breakouts from the start. I mean, man, if I was a rookie free agent, one of the first places I'd told my agent, hey, I see what they've done out in Miami. That's where I want to go. If you can get me on there, man, let's go. Because you got a chance, right?
I felt, and I've always felt this way, the way Steve Ross gives out guaranteed money and contracts, and the fact he doesn't, if it's under like $5 million, Steve Ross really doesn't care. It's like pocket change to him. So why would they not like guarantee half of the rookie contract to any to the top 5 or 10 undrafted free agents? Steve Ross don't care. And it's not like you're going to sit here and eat a ton of cap space if you cut them. It's going to prevent teams from poaching them if you put these players on the practice squad. I just, you know, and they've given out some really impressive contracts to undrafted players. And I'm shocked. I saw Mason Rager at Bomarito's camp, and he was probably one of the top five guys that impressed me. Physical built. He's a little bit stiff, but when you're a defensive end, it's not like I'm asking him to be an outside linebacker and dropping into coverage. I just need somebody to set the edge. You know, hopefully these young players can really contribute. And truthfully speaking, we're going to learn how well John Eric Sullivan is at evaluating talent. And to me, that's what's going to set this franchise apart from what they've done the last 20 years.
I got to ask you, because I know sometimes, you know how people come up to you and they're like, hey, Omar, what do you think of the schedule? Or what's the other? Hey, how good can we be, man? I saw the power rankings. What do you tell everybody about how good the team can be this season? I'm just curious.
how good is Malik Willis going to be? Is he a bottom 20 quarterback or is he a top 15 quarterback? That's really going to determine where this team is. The talent from playmakers, I'm writing a column right now. I know it's not a very popular opinion, but I think Kevin Coleman Jr., the slot receiver, the last of the receivers drafted, I think he has a real good chance of being a huge impact player when it comes to this rookie class. I think he can go in there and immediately win that slot spot. It's not like Malik Washington was actually doing anything in it anyway. To me, this team, it comes down and can they set the edge? Can they set the edge and will they get respectable safety play? Those are, to me, those are the four things that, obviously are the offensive line blocks, but those are the four things that are really gonna dictate to me how well this team can play. Because Malik is going to have those moments where he's got to deliver on a third and eight and he's got to make a tough throw with a blitz coming, or he's got to connect downfield to one-on-one with a wide receiver after scrambling out the pocket. Chop Robinson and Josh Uche, they're going to have to set the edge. You can't set the edge. You cannot pass rush on third downs because nobody, we saw that early in the season last year. Nobody was trying to throw the ball against the Dolphins because they couldn't stop the run. So, that's how Cleveland bludgeoned Dolphins to death up there early in the season. You have to be able to stop the run. And I really don't know how they're going to do it this year because you clearly didn't get any edge players. Well, actually, you did, but did you make it a priority? And then safety play. Your guess as good as mine. Who's going to be the starting safety for the Miami Dolphins this year? I can't call it.
Yeah, one of them's going to be Trader, don't you think? From last year, there's a good chance they liked him a lot last year. I know he didn't get to play enough for you and stuff, but I think they like him a lot.
They did, but they're gone, and they didn't play him. So there's no excuse. The people that he played under aren't employed by an NFL team right now.
Yeah.
You can't sit here and say, and I get it. These guys are trying to win. They're trying to save their jobs, but you got to be better. You got to be, but that's my perfect example. And Trader is one of the reasons that I say it's going to be hard for you to coach 13 rookies. I know that it's possible, but it's going to be extremely difficult. Go inside, Mila. Well, it's going to be extremely difficult to do.
Well, it is because you don't have a lot of veteran players on this team right now. Hey, first of all, I got to tell you, man, I've been around this like you have for a long, long time. We've never seen anything like this. I probably should have started the show because the Finns dead salary cap space, whatever the final number, I've heard 182 million. I don't know what the number may be. All I know is it's the highest number in the history of the NFL. So what they have done clearing off the cemetery money here is we never seen anything like this, not even close to it, Omar. So it's kind of hard to explain to people it's driven by a lot of young dudes or a lot of guys getting a second chance that are coming here to kind of get their careers going on the cheap. That's what this thing's about.
It's really about, John Eric Sullivan said something a term that I've used on the airwaves with you. It's a roster full of rookies and minimum guys.
Yeah.
Now, who's to say that some of these guys can't play? I'm sorry, but Tutu Atwell, he could play. Say whatever you want about him. Tutu Atwell could play.
I thought Tutu was really good with the Rams. I do. I thought he did a lot of good things, and then they kind of just they're not enough targets. That's kind of the story here, right? Not enough targets to go around. So some guys lost some snaps and targets.
Yeah. I mean, and sometimes injuries factor into that. When your opportunity comes, like a perfect example is Lonnie Johnson. He was a second round pick for the Houston Texans. His opportunity came early. Every time his opportunity came, he got injured. And then they eventually just passed him up and he became a career special teamer, hung on in the league. But who's to say that he can't be an NFL starter? I honestly don't know. The film will show us that. The play and exhibition season will show us that. Ethan Bonner is another perfect example. Ethan Bonner is one of the few cornerbacks I've ever seen in the Dolphins uniform who can run with Tyreek Hill. Now, you know, big guy, physical, got size to him. When his opportunity came last year, he suffered an injury in, I think it was the final training camp preseason. So we never got to see what Ethan Bonner could do, but he got an end zone, you know, interception in the end zone. He contributed to the Washington win, getting that fumble that took him to overtime. We don't know what Ethan Bonner can be. At one point, Brent Grimes was a practice squad player, and then he got opportunity and he rose to the occasion. That's what this season is going to be about. We're going to be able to see who will rise to the occasion. And maybe if we're lucky, we get four Zach Sealers out of this situation.
Yeah. Well, this, like I said, man, this is a completely different situation than we've been in due to what happened this offseason and cleaning house. So, it's going to be fun to watch and see what happens. By the way, so far, the way the GM and the way the head coach have handled things, I tell you what, man, you couldn't get off to a better start. Their communication with you guys and with the, which goes to the fan base. Hey man, just give it to me straight. Right.
Absolutely. What I love, and I, and this is a knock on Mike McDaniel, but, Jeff Hafley takes 30 seconds to communicate something that would take Mike McDaniel's 3 minutes. You know, that's gotta be beneficial to the team at some point, but truth be told, I don't know if he can coach. I wrote a story earlier this week about an interview he had with Richard Sherman, where he acknowledged and admitted, I'm spending most of my time working on offense, learning offense, because, you know, I made that mistake last time when I was a college head coach, where I can only really coach one side of the ball. Well, you know, this is something that's important that I can honestly tell you, I haven't seen here since maybe Tony Sperano. Joe Philbin couldn't do crap on defense. Adam Gase couldn't do crap on defense. Brian Flores couldn't do crap on offense. Mike McDaniel couldn't do crap on defense.
But you know what's crazy about that? I got to tell you what's crazy, and I can't speak for Jimmy Johnson and what he was like, but like Don Shula spent all his time in our offensive meetings. He never went to a defensive meeting. He never got up, no matter how bad the defense was.
Yeah.
When that thing was on automatic pilot with Marino and the passing game, he never went. Let me go talk to those guys. He did not step in. When Arnsey was around, he did not dare. Bill Arnsberger, he did not dare go down to that defensive room unless he was ready to put on and start calling plays. So – I just thought that was kind of normal. I swear, I like very few coaches get involved in both sides a lot.
I don't know for certain, but I've talked to Dan Campbell and Dan, there are certain coaches that just touch every aspect of the field and every aspect. And I'm not saying that Mike McDaniel didn't help with game planning or strategy, but you knew it was hands off. You know it was like, okay.
Oh no, he turned it over. Like when he got the old grouchy guy, that guy. Hey, listen, man, there was no doubt.
Vic Fangio.
Hey, Vic, it's your deal, man. Like you're here, brother. We're paying you a lot of money. You go get him. No, I ain't touching your deal.
We knew we couldn't even ask Mike McDaniel defensive questions because you don't know. But that, you know, I respect that Hafley is trying to you know, well, obviously with an install and you want to, you know, it's your offense. You want it to look good. You want it to you know, and you're a defensive coordinator, so you know what challenges are offenses. That's the reason I believe he's always going to have a mobile athletic quarterback. Even the undrafted guy that they signed is a mobile athletic quarterback, just because he likes that. He believes it truly challenges defenses. So it'll be interesting to see what this offense looks like, or how much play action they're going to install, how much movement of the quarterbacks they're going to install. So
I'll tell you, you hit a really interesting one though. I was just thinking about this with the, all the rookie wide receivers and the veteran guys that are coming back and the rookie, the veteran free agents. That's going to be some interesting stuff, because the guy you were talking about, the wide receiver, you like, man, he does a lot of things Malik does. And I'm curious to see, you think he might be better at it. I saw his highlights and, you know, his run after catch in the middle of the field. He's impressive.
He's great at creating separation.
Like I got to tell you, Malik's going to be a bitch returning kicks. He's not going to give that up. That's going to be a tough one for somebody to take away. I thought he was really good at it a year ago, especially on punts.
Yeah, not, and this isn't a knock on Malik. I just think Malik is probably a better flanker than he is a slot receiver. A slot receiver, you've got to be able to create separation. You got to have a little bit of wiggle to you. And I get it. Malik is, you know, Malik is a solid, decent returner. But, you know, when you're averaging, I think it was like 4 point something yards per reception, per attempt thrown at you, you're not creating that much separation.
No, it was bad. It was not good. Those yards per catch were not good.
Yeah, and obviously the whole offense was basically sucking on fumes last season. I'm not going to say why or how. Well, the team stopped believing that they could throw the ball past 25 yards. So
we're all trying to let last year go because Woody's really been working on me. Like, hey, can you let it go? And I know sometimes, Omar, it's hard because you got to, you know, before we get ahead, you got to say what was wrong last year. But
yeah,
I'm trying, Omar. I'm trying to let it go. They're all gone. Everybody's gone. And
yeah, it's like cancer, man. You can't think you're terminal if they go in there and cut out all the parts that got cancer, man.
Well, that was a strong one. Well, that was strong right there. All right. Hey, Omar, thank you, man. Appreciate you coming on, helping me out a little bit here with this voice issue I'm having. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate you, Joe.
All right. Omar Kelly from the Miami Herald joining us this morning. Talk a little bit about the Dolphins and getting set. We've got a lot more stuff to get to here this morning. All right, Woody, thank you so much. Kyle Krabs, the host of Locked On Fins, NFL analyst for A to Z Sports, joins us. Kyle, good morning, man. It's finally here, a couple days of rookie mini camp, and was looking at some of your stuff last night. I am like you. I'm really curious to see how they're going to use Kyle Lewis because I really believe he's going to be a hell of a lot more than just a special teams player. He was so good in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Good morning, Joe. And Kyle Lewis was one of my favorite picks that this group made this year. And I think in the right plan with the right amount of time and how you go about building his quote unquote portfolio is going to be a big part of how much you can ultimately end up giving him. But he's physically capable of doing so much, whether it's a true will linebacker off the ball or a sub package guy or a guy who can kick out and play in the slot as a bigger nickel player. And those are all roles that this group has kind of used to infer that it's on the table for him. So I'm fascinated to find out how quickly he picks stuff up and how fast he buys their trust to give him more things to do, because he's got a chance to be a real Swiss Army knife for a defense.
Yeah, so you don't see him as a pure, like, moving at 220 pounds, actually being like a full-time, like, strong safety back there, do you? You don't ever see that situation, do you?
Probably not. No, I think I do. I think he's athletic enough to take half-field assignments, sure, but the question is, where do you play him on early downs and in base defense, right? So I think he's much better suited, in my opinion, when you're in traditional 4-3 to be your will linebacker. And then when you get into nickel, he's the guy who's still on the second level but is bumped out over top of tight ends. And whether you classify him as a nickel or a safety, and then you can do all your coverage rotations, and maybe he starts in the slot and ends up playing deep half assignments. Like, I think he's capable of doing that. But would I see him in first and 10 playing deep half field alignments and playing 20 yards off the ball? No, I don't think that's probably where you get the most out of him.
Let me ask you about Kevin Coleman. We haven't talked much about him. Omar was talking about him earlier. I don't know how you see him being used, slot inside, but I watch him, and I think of Malik Washington.
And yeah.
What about for you?
I think that's it's one of those picks for me that embodies when they talk about, we're going to be a competitive group. Everybody's going to have to fight, scratch, claw, and compete. Because I agree with you. I think the role that's most obvious for him is the one where you have Malik Washington, who's a third-year player, who's on a rookie contract, and they've had some nice things to say about him this offseason. And even the special team stuff, right? Like, that's where Malik found his footing, was the special team stuff, in addition to being a slot receiver. That's all the same stuff. So you'd spend a fifth-round draft choice on another wide receiver that's coming into the fray, and his traits and best stuff, at least with what you're projecting off of who he was in college, is a lot of overlap with Malik. So how much he ultimately earns, is it, well, we want to have Malik more free to do the offense, so maybe Malik doesn't do the special team stuff? Is it truly a, hey, you two are going at it, and may the best man win? You know, it's just another storyline for training camp for all these guys that are fighting for playing time.
Well, I'll tell you what, that is kind of the story, isn't it? They talked about open competition, and I look at those two and I go, man, that's going to be an interesting one. Hey, another one is, and I think you would agree with me, there's going to be some rookie free agents make this 53-man roster. This guy, Mason Rager, is a really interesting guy. Some had him, I don't know if you had him getting drafted. I saw some people had him going in the fifth, sixth round, and he doesn't get drafted. What's your take on his chances as an edge rusher?
Yeah, Rager was a guy I had a mid-late day three grade on. I think he had a missed season with some medical stuff, so you never know what kind of influence that's potentially going to have on a guy's draft stock. But I think he's a legitimate threat to make the roster for sure. And you know, there's not a lot of guaranteed money in that room. And I think that's when I look at the guys that they signed in free agency, I'm asking, you know, okay, who, even if the salaries aren't big, who got guaranteed salaries? And it's Josh Uche, and that's it. So everybody else, all those other guys, the David Ajabos, the Robert Beals, like, if there's no guarantees, then it becomes true, authentic competition. Now, the good news for those veteran guys is a guy like Rager coming in, even as an UDFA, his salary is going to not be that much less than what these veteran players are getting. So it's not like there's a low hanging fruit for Miami to say, oh, well, we'll just keep the UDFA because he's cheaper. Yeah, it'll be cheaper, but not by a whole lot. So he's got some Riger's got some juice to him. And he's somebody, I think he was the Shrine Bowl defensive MVP or either practice player of the week, one of those two. So he had a strong pre-draft process and kind of declared himself as a player. And I would not be surprised if he ends up getting some burn in the preseason here and some buzz.
So I want to ask you about this one. This is always interesting because we say defensive end and we say edge rusher and guys on the outside. Look at some guys are going to be allowed in not to be great against a run and just tee off and get there. But there's also going to be a lot of guys going to be asked, somebody's got to take care of the edge, right? Force it back inside, not get blocked, and allow guys to get outside and open up the train down the field there. I'm just curious, as you look at the two groups, how does that whole group and that rotation, including three or four rookies that are going to have a chance to get those jobs and try to figure out who can do what?
Yeah, I think you do look at the guys that they have as the perceived edge guys, and you see a pretty clear group, stand-up outside linebackers. I think Max Llewellyn, the seventh round draft choice, has a chance to be a little bit more of a base end.
Okay.
But I also think about two guys that are sets the play out over top of them. Like,
you're breaking up on us there, bud. I didn't get to hear the name. Do we still have him? Is he there? Now we lost. We lost you completely, bud. Here. Go ahead and talk. I just got you back there. Try one more time. Go ahead.
Check 1-2.
Yeah. Okay. Who are you saying has the edge that you like there? I'm sorry. You broke up on us.
I think, no, that's my fault. I think Max Llewellyn has a chance to be that guy, but I also want to keep on Zeke Biggers from last year's class, who I think can play base end with these outside rush linebacker two-point stance guys lined up outside of him. I think with his length, he's got 35-inch arms. I think that's a great player to put out there over top of a offensive tackle in a 4-eye and let him kind of be the guy who creates knockback to the formational strength, and then you have somebody with some speed outside of him. So I think maybe you get some position flex with the Zach Sealer could probably do some of that for you too. And that's where the bigger body guys, being the guys that live on the interior with Grant and Phillips,
yeah.
I think you get some flexibility with some of those 300-pound guys to maybe do some of that stuff for you as well.
What do you like Trey Moore doing? How's he fit into this? Do they move him around a little bit? What's your take on Trey Moore?
Yeah, I think it's informative that he's on the Dolphins roster listed as a linebacker. I think that's very informative, and I think he's got a skill set that can be a you think back to a couple of the past few years, and you're seeing Bradley Chubb and Chop Robinson dropping into to shallow zone drops, and you'd ideally like to have those guys rush in the pass. So I think Trey's a guy who can blur those two lines between, hey, if we're going to fire an inside linebacker from the second level and we need that seventh player in coverage to take a hook, I think Trey can be that player, and I also think he can rush the passer. So I think Halfley will have some good versatility there with him to be able to do some of their pressure package stuff and know if we got to drop somebody, he's a guy who's a little bit more natural in doing some of that, and I think he'd be well-served to do it.
Man, can you imagine Trey Moore and Kyle Lewis and the different things that they've already started thinking about that those guys yep. might be able to do in some of these defensive packages they're putting together? Kind of crazy.
Absolutely.
All right, I got to ask you this because everybody, and you must get it. I know I get it all the time. Hey, I looked at the schedule, Joe, and from what you've seen, how good can we be this year as a team? Like, what do you think, man? What do you say to everybody?
Yeah, I think you look at who the players were or who the teams were last year, and you acknowledge that you had a lot of teams that were good teams on the schedule last year that you're scheduled to play this year. These teams can become so different. Now, maybe not to the extreme that we've heard the last couple of years about 40% of your roster turns over on an annual basis.
Yeah.
Most teams aren't that extreme, but it is different every single year. And there's teams that, you know, they lose a player and it changes their entire DNA defensively or offensively, or somebody gets hurt. And when you play teams is just as important as who you play. So, you know, you got to play them all and see what happens. There's not going to be a lot of teams that I think you stack the Dolphins up on paper against right now and look at their rosters and say, oh, I think Miami's got more established talent. Right. And I use that word a lot, established talent, because Miami has some talented players now, and they do have some established talent. But a lot of the unknowns about Miami make them very difficult to project, where you feel like you've got a better idea of who some of these other teams are going to be because they have more established players on the roster. So that's, I think, the disconnect that exists right now is I have no idea how good, how quickly Miami will be. But we also don't know. Some of these teams, it happens every year. They regress dramatically. And so other teams come out of nowhere and you have no expectations for them and they're highly competitive. So you just have to play them all and see what happens.
Well, I do know this, man. I've never seen a cap hit like this NFL history. Yeah, I mean, these are big numbers, right? I don't even know what the final is. It 180 million, whatever.
It's 179 and change, but who's counting?
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, that right there, that cripples you a little bit to get this. But everybody knows what it is. Hey, nobody feels bad for you. Like you said, you got to develop, get these guys ready to go. I think that's going to be a message from the coach. He doesn't care if you're right out of college or you were a backup last year on somebody else's team, man. We're here to win and win right now. So we'll see how that whole thing goes. Hey, by the way, I do want to ask you, how are they going to take care of, and I've asked you this before, a few of the veteran players, is there going to be money left in June to potentially give some new contracts out?
Or Yeah, there will be. So, and I don't know which ones they ultimately will or will not commit to. And for two of them, with Achan and Brewer, because they've moved money around in those contracts already to kind of help them as they've offloaded a bunch of dead money, those cap charges will go up. But there's a chance they pay Jordan Brooks, Azeez Al-Sayer, a linebacker who made the Pro Bowl from the Texans, the day of the first round of the draft, he signed a 3-year, $54 million contract. And if Brooks got something in that ballpark, his cap charge versus what it is now could actually go down a few million dollars. So they will have the ability to add those big payrolls if they would like, because you're giving a signing bonus to go with it that then naturally gets spread out across the life of the contract. And you only really have this logjam this year and the here and now because you have 60% of your cap that's ate up by players not on the roster. But once June 1st comes, they'll have the ability to do that as they want to.
Yeah. Hey, Kyle, thank you, man. I really appreciate you coming on. Have a great Mother's Day with your wife and the family up there, bud. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. Rest up. I'm also under the weather, so I feel your pain.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Kyle Krabs, the host of Locked On Fins and NFL analyst for A to Z Sports. Yeah, this has been a week from hell. Hey, Woody, this has been a week I'd like to forget about. I don't know where the hell it came from. Sunday night, it just kicked in, and oh, God. I think as you get older, it takes longer to get healthy again. I don't know. Is that how it is for old people? I guess maybe I'm in that category right now. Hey, Marlon. Hey, they got a tough schedule. You look at the names, and starting, by the way, with New England and Buffalo, who you face twice each. And then on top of that, you look at some of the teams they're playing. But it's – look at this thing, and I know our fan base – I get it. I don't know if it's kind of just when you walk up to somebody and you're like, hey, what do you think of our team this year? You know, it's just like, hey, okay. I said, you know, I like some of the changes we made and like the new GM and new head coach, the new quarterback I'm excited about. Yeah, those three moves I'm really excited about. But because people want to know, whoa. How many games do you think we'll win? Well, what do you think? That schedule, what do you think? Hey, it's tough. This whole thing is going to take a step backwards as far as the things that we care about, winning games. It's doesn't have enough talent yet. We'll find out what we have and how quickly it can develop. But as of right now, for just counting guys coming in who haven't played yet and what you have returning, got three or four really good veteran players, and you've got or five or six really good veteran players. You got a couple really good young players, and we got a bunch of unknown on this team. And that's not trying to be a downer on it, because I like what we're doing, but 13 draft picks, and we'll see how quickly they develop. That's probably how good we're going to be. Then's just the numbers. This I don't know, $182 million. I don't know if it's – I saw $160 million, $180 million as far as dead salary cap space. It's a lot of money, man. That's the highest number in the history of the NFL, just to give you an idea. What we are doing, we're doing a lot of things we haven't seen before. And this is what our GM and our head coach, they knew when they got the job, like, what it was going to take, and it was going to have to be ripped apart and cleaned up financially, and that's where we are. So, but it is exciting if you just look at young guys coming in, putting an emphasis back on the draft again, and not trading away, trying to get just guys that have been good on other teams to come down here that cost you a lot of money and do it that way. And we did that. We tried it. We tried that. Gave it a shot. It didn't work. And it didn't work because we didn't win a playoff game. So it didn't work. Now, it was fun to watch. It was, you know, great feeling. It was fun to see that kind of play and everything, but never got us a playoff win. Not one. Not one. And the 1 year, what did we average? 29 points a game, whatever, and just didn't win a playoff game with it. So it didn't work. You can't win playoff games. It didn't work. You can't win your division. It didn't work. And so now we take a step back and we're going to run it the way it should be run through the draft. And it probably going to take some time. And I know I'm like you. I'm running out of time. I'm like you. We get older, we're running out of time. And so, but when you ask me how many games we're going to win, I don't know. There's a reason they have us in the, it's not that ESPN doesn't like the Dolphins right now. Somebody said, I don't think they like us. Well, no, what do you mean? What don't you see? Like, take your blinders off. We look at what we're doing. That's how you become on the power rankings dead last. What we're doing, what we have done, and what we're cleaning up. And so that's the situation and the schedule. Look at, I don't know, what did they say, second toughest schedule in the National Football League? It's a tough schedule. But for everybody going, boy, you got to win games, and this, our owner's getting older. Yeah, Steve Ross getting older. What is he, 85? But he better be patient for another year or so. He's got to know more than anybody sitting in those meetings with the rest of those guys on that committee of guys that help make these decisions. The over-under in Vegas is 4.5. Over-under on wins is 4.5 games. So here we go. Let's get going, develop it, see how it goes, and see what they're able to put on the 53-man roster and get it started, and see if they can't surprise some teams and develop quickly and stay healthy and have some success. But I understand when you look what we look like right now at a lot of positions with the unknown. I mean, you're counting on guys that haven't played a snap yet in the NFL. How quickly can this thing come together is going to be big for this whole thing. So that would be my take. If you come up to me tonight and we're having a drink together and you go, hey, Joe, got to ask you, man, just me and you, how do you feel about this thing? You know what? Same thing I said on the radio is how I feel. I love the people that are here to get it turned around, but it's going to take a second. It's going to take a second or two to fix back up. It's not going to happen overnight. It's just not. And we got to find out if the quarterback can play. Hopefully our offensive line. Look, this is kind of the start of something. The five guys we have. And that can be, boy, that would go a long way. How about starting five and they stay healthy? How about that one? That would be nice. That'd be a nice way to start for this whole thing, to kind of set the tone on this whole football team. Is our starting five on that offensive line. Find the five, see them play all year together, and see how good they can be. That would be a fun one. But I'm curious, like everybody, man, see what the 53 is going to look like and how good they'll be and get coached up, and then we'll go into the schedule and we'll see what it looks like. But that's all I can give you, man. What Vegas is saying, or ESPN and their early power rankings, now that the draft's over and everybody's roster's kind of put together here as far as having an idea what it's going to look like. We got a lot more stuff to get to with the 7 o'clock hour coming up. I think we're going to catch Omar Kelly on his way over to camp this morning. Kyle Krabs will join us. We'll talk to him. Mike Florio will join us as well. So we have a lot of stuff to get to here this morning. I do want to take a second this morning to tell you about Recovery Unplugged for just a second. And to everybody out there, hey, Mental Health Awareness Month is going on right now. And it's important, man. I don't know if it's affected anybody out there through family or friends that you've noticed, man, you're going through something, bud. Let's get this going. You were never like this before. We can help you, whether it's depression or anything else. If your mental health just needs a little comeback season, whatever sets you off and going through divorces or losing your job or some things have just changed in your life and you haven't been able to get out of that little funk you've been in, I'm ready to help you get a comeback season going right now.
You guys end up drafting 13 players, like you said. And I'm sure, you know, the draft boards kind of fluctuate throughout the day. You know, there's obviously surprises here and there, but you guys were able to get Caden Proctor, Chris Johnson, Jacob Rodriguez, Caleb Douglas. Which one of these guys, you know, out of the 13 guys was probably the most surprising, where you guys were like, man, we weren't expecting him to be there, and he was, and it worked out?
Oh, it was good. probably if one guy I didn't think would be there when we took him was probably Rodriguez. I thought he would have been picked sooner. Just his college tape, I think the upside, I think the potential, I think the leadership capability, the playmaking ability, the production. I thought he would have been gone by that pick. So when he was still there, that one, we were all pretty excited about that pick. I mean, you could even say the same. I mean, I know for us, like Proctor, I mean, that when he was still available for us to pick then, when we picked, because we moved back and got two extra picks, and he was going to be the guy we took at 11, but we got him at 12 with two extra picks on top of it, which I thought was an awesome job by John Eric. With his size and his potential and how young he is, he's a guy that we could be looking at down the road and people are going to say, wow, how'd that guy get drafted at 12 at a premium position with how young he is, how big he is, and how talented he is. That one, I think people might look back on in a few years and try to figure out what made him fall to.
Dolphins head coach Jeff Hafley there discussing some of his draft picks, and we are going to discuss more with Chris Perkins from the South Florida Sun Sentinel as we head out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale, one location, Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan, toyotaofhollywood.com. Perk, good morning. How you doing, my friend?
Oh, fellas, I'm on cup of coffee number two, so I'm ready to work. I'm ready to talk. I'm ready to go downstairs, get my workout, go to Publix, wash some clothes, and then go sit on the beach after that. How about that?
Quite a day plan there, Perk. My goodness.
All planned out, baby. All planned out. And it probably won't go that way. You know how it is, right? Man makes plans, God laughs. But I'm hoping it works out that way.
Well, Perk, I want to ask you what you thought of the comments there, what we just heard from Hafley and discussing a couple of his picks at Endless. And I know that there was a lot of backlash early on from the Proctor pick. I think they've laid their cards out on the table here. They were thrilled to get him. That was their guy from the beginning. Have things calmed down a little bit, though, around that pick and that it wasn't Reuben Bain? Has everyone kind of calmed down a little bit?
No. You know that things aren't going to calm down for years until we get a definitive answer on that. And for the Dolphins' sake, it better be Proctor. Look, I like their draft overall. I gave them a B-. There's room to question a few of these picks, right? The Caden Proctor pick, you know, it occurs to me, you guys remember when the Dolphins said that, and I think it was John Eric Sullivan who said he was told that you have to take some doubles instead of trying to hit home runs. I think the Dolphins consider Proctor the double, and I think they consider Bain the home run. I think they consider Proctor more of a sure thing than Bain. I think maybe they consider that Bain has a higher feast or famine possibility there, so they took more of the sure thing in Proctor. Jacob Rodriguez, that's a pick. You know, Proctor, Rodriguez, and Caleb Douglas are the ones that I could look at, and for one reason or another think the Dolphins either took a risk or they thought they were smarter than everybody else. Proctor is one of those risks because Caleb Downs or Reuben Bain might be a better player. Jacob Rodriguez, another one of those risks because two edge rushers were taken immediately after them, right? Zion Young of Missouri, Derek Moore of Michigan. They needed an edge rusher. They already have two middle linebacker, weak side linebacker types in Jordan Brooks and Terrell Dotson. But the Dolphins said they aren't afraid of competition and they're going to take best player available. So, you know, Rodriguez represents that. And then, of course, Caleb Douglas, the wide receiver that from Texas Tech that everybody thought would go a little bit lower. And the Dolphins took him, you know, where they took him in the third round. So we'll see with those three picks. But again, I gave the draft a B-, and I really do think they think of Proctor as the double and Bain as kind of the home run. So they went with the safer pick in their mind.
I disagree with you, and I go the reverse order. I think they took Proctor as viewed him as the home run. Hafley's comments just now basically clarified that in terms of they think that in a couple of years, people be wondering how did he slip that far down the draft. When most of us didn't expect him to be selected that high, but let me flip to another prospect. Jacob Rodriguez is the pick that I like the most. Obviously, it's the pick that Halfley liked the most because he didn't expect him to be there. I'm pretty sure he projected him as a possible first-round selection. Tell me, Perk, why we can't envision a lineup that includes Jacob Rodriguez, the rookie, as the inside linebacker, and Terrell Dotson and Jordan Brooks as the outside guys in this defense?
Neither Brooks nor Dotson is a true strong side linebacker. You know, kind of that burly guy who you need to be able to stop the run. Willie Gay fits that mold. I think he's the only one on the roster currently who fits that kind of strong side backer mold. However, I do think that Halfley and Sully are creative. And they kind of say, okay, this is your traditional 4-3, but we can play a 3-4, or we can play some sort of hybrid defense where we get guys like Trey Moore and Kyle Lewis involved, who are kind of like, you know, wild card, you know, jack of all trades type defenders that you can put it at a safety or a linebacker or a nickel. So, you know, while Jacob, to me, you have three kind of inside, weak side type backers in T-Dot and Brooks and Jacob Rodriguez, I do think that this defense, this coach is a little less traditional, and maybe they have some kind of non-traditional roles or defense thought out that they're going to experiment with.
Perk, what's your expectation for Caden Proctor year one, and how good do you think the Dolphins' offensive line can be this year? Because we're starving for better trench play.
Oh. Yeah, I know. You know what? I think Proctor is going to be okay. I've written that I think the floor for him is Juwan James. I think the ceiling for him is Laremy Tunsil. I don't think he's going to wash out. I don't think that he's a boom or bust guy. And I think Omar kind of said that about him in a column. But I think Proctor is going to be okay. To me, the big thing is, are Caleb Downs or Reuben Bain going to be better? And to me, that's the thing that can haunt the Dolphins. But look, Dono, I think the offensive line looks okay right now. If you have Aaron Brewer at center, you got Proctor at left guard, you got Patrick Paul at left tackle, you have Austin Jackson at right tackle, and then at right guard, Savai Naya. We'll see what Jamari Sawyer, the free agent, can do. I like Andrew Meyer as a backup inside lineman center guard, although we haven't seen him on the field yet. But, that's one step to depth. They still have a long way to go as far as depth. But I do think this offensive line shows potential to be the best offensive line they've had in the last 3 or 4 years.
Let's put some respect on what they did the second half of the season. Devon Achane didn't get to 1,300 yards on his own. They were pummeling people and creating holes, and Brewer was having a dynamic season. Do you think that they can pick up where they left off last year, Perk?
Yeah, I do. And look, I think one of the big things for this team, for this offense, for Jeff Halfley is going to be, don't give Devon Achane 30 touches a game. At his heart, he's still a 191-pound running back, right? Nothing is going to change that. So if you sign him to this contract extension, which I think he should get, he deserves, which I think James Cook of Buffalo is a good model, the 3 years. I think 3 years for 48 with $30 million guaranteed, because at the end of this, Achane as a 191-pound running back, you put three more years on him, there's going to be some significant wear and tear on him. So try to preserve him as best you can during this rebuild, because I don't know what Achane is going to be like in 3 years. So to me, the offensive line can do a good job. The run game can do a good job, but you got to be smart with how you use Achane. You got to develop Ollie Gordon II and Jalen Wright. You got to develop your tight ends, Dulcich. You've got to develop wide receiver 2 and 3. You don't have wide receiver 1 this year. All designed so that you take some touches off of Achane so that he's fresh throughout this contract extension.
Perk, I know you said the Cook deal is kind of the framework, but do you feel comfortable giving Achane? One, he's not going to accept just $30 million. That brings him down to 10 a year. Right now he's sitting on the franchise tag possibly, and what he's making this season that brings him to 20. Even though I would never bat an eye at an extra $10 million, he's trying to stay up there with his peers. I believe the kid that signed at New Orleans is probably the new benchmark. But do you think that this deal gets done, Perk? I mean, and why would it get done when you're all crying poor all offseason?
It's going to be a big test for John Eric Sullivan and Jeff Hafley's regime. Can it get done? Can you also do something with Aaron Brooks and Jordan Aaron Brewer and Jordan Banks, who also deserve extensions this offseason? Somebody's not going to be happy among those three. Somebody's not going to be happy either because they don't get an extension or it's not the amount that they want. I don't think any of the three should get the amount that they want in the spirit of giving back a little bit. Now, look, if you're HN, you're a running back, you can't afford to give back because your career is so limited. If you're Brew and Brooks, you can't afford to give back because you're 28 years old. This might be the last multi-year contract you get. Somebody's going to have to take a haircut, though. I like giving Achan his extension because he really he's your, I don't know if he's your best player, but he's your most impactful player. I'll say that over Malik Willis, over Patrick Paul, over Brew, Brooks, Sealer, any of them, he's your most impactful player. Now, you know, Brew or Brooks might be better center linebacker than Achan is running back, but impact, you've got to do something with Achan. He's my priority as far as contract extensions.
Chris Perkins from the Sun Sentinel here with us on QAM. All right, Perk, let's talk quarterback here, Malik Willis. What are your expectations? Clearly, these guys, these Green Bay guys, they have, you know, given us their thoughts on him. They think he's the guy. And, you know, we're going to find out this season if he can be the long-term answer at that position. I know there's a big quarterback class coming through the draft next season, but do you believe that Malik Willis will show us in the coming weeks and months that he is the answer to the quarterback position for the Dolphins?
I think Malik Willis, used in the right way, can be the quarterback answer for the Dolphins, and here's what I mean. Use him in the same way that Seattle just used Sam Darnold, right? They didn't try to turn him into Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes. They put a good team around Darnold and say, we need you to make 7 or 8 key plays per game. We don't need you to carry the offense. Just make these third down, fourth down, red zone, these types of plays for us to get us over the hump. If you do that with Malik Willis, he's got a chance to succeed. If you try to turn him into Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes, I don't think it's going to work. So I haven't seen that type of pedigree or gene from Malik Willis. What I see from him is, you know, look at a lot of these successful quarterbacks. Look, there's a reason that Jared Goff has been to a Super Bowl and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson have not, right? Because they put a good team around Jared Goff, both in Detroit and with the Rams, who he went to the Super Bowl with. He didn't take them to the Super Bowl. He was one of the main reasons they went to the Super Bowl. And I think if you take that approach with Malik Willis, if you're the Dolphins, you have a chance to succeed. Now, obviously, you have to build the team around Malik Willis, and that's going to take a couple of years, maybe 3 years. But, you know, don't make Malik the focal point of the offense. Make him a key part of the offense. Then I think you can have success.
Perk, when Steve Ross, you know, committed to adding the tennis courts and the Formula One track. Do you think did he know at that time that was going to come at the expense of Super Bowls, or was that something that kind of blindsided him after the fact?
Man, I don't know, Dino. You know, I don't know what to think about this story. You know, I was covering F1 and I wasn't there when Steve Ross made the announcement that they might not get another Super Bowl because they don't have all the facilities, the grounds to do all the entertaining and all that kind of stuff. You know, I'm thinking about writing about this. I'm not quite sure what I would say, but I know that, look, on the outside, I think this is another affirmation to those Steve Ross detractors that you know, he's not serious about football, that tennis and F1 are the things that really make him go, and he doesn't really want to win with the Dolphins. He's not serious about it. I do think that Steve Ross wants to win. I do think that this year represents a significant change in the Dolphins and how they're run, right? Because you look at who he's listening to now. Remember when he first bought the team, he listened to Carl Peterson, the former president and GM of the Kansas City Chiefs, right? He listened to a football insider, an executive. Then he started listening to other football people, Jeff Ireland, Dennis Hickey, Mike Tannenbaum, Chris Greer. That didn't work. Now he's listening to kind of football outsiders, right? Troy Aikman and Daniel Stillman, his son-in-law, who is a executive in his relevant sports group. Those two now have the significant voice. So that's a big difference in how this team is being run. That's a major change. And to me, it shows that Steve Ross knows what he was doing was not working. He needed to make a change. He does want to win in football. But I see if you can't have a Super Bowl, the message that that sends is F1 is more important. So I've got to talk to some people about that opinion. That's kind of where I am right now. I know Steve Ross cares about football, but this appears that, you know, if you're taking F1 and tennis over football, which should be your main thing, it sends a wrong message. It appears wrong. So that's kind of where I am. I don't have a definite opinion. I'm still kind of trying to feel it out. But I've thought about writing a column about that. I'm kind of up and down, back and forth on it.
Perk, better lay off the tennis slander, though, Perk. Joe's not here today, but he certainly won't like that.
Hey, you know what? Here's a funny thing. I used to consider tennis the best event in Miami when it was down at Key Biscayne. Now I think F1 is the best event in Miami. I love, and I'm not an F1 fan. I'm a Miami Grand Prix fan, if you know what I'm saying. It's kind of like being a fan of the Super Bowl, but not being a football fan. You like the parties and the atmosphere. That's what I love about the Miami Grand Prix. But at the expense of a Super Bowl, that's a tough one to take.
Well, Perk, the one thing I know we are eligible to get is a home playoff game. At some point, that's something that you are eligible to get. So maybe we'll get to that, and we'll worry about Super Bowls at some other time down the road. But I do look forward if you write about that. I think it's a very interesting topic.
Yeah, so, I'll read.
Yeah, we'll check that out, of course, in the Sun Sentinel. Perk, thank you so much for the time. It's always great to talk to you.
All right, guys. We'll do it again.
All right, Chris Perkins from the Sun Sentinel. Make sure to check out his work there, and a very interesting topic to discuss. And that F1's a big event for them. That is a big, big money maker. I don't know how that compares
it's
to a
bougie.
Super Bowl.
It's bougie. I mean, host that F1. You can charge whatever you want to for the snacks. It's like,
unlimited. Donald. I went out there and I saw some of those prices, and I was glad I brought some Clif Bars. All right, we're going to take a pause. The 8 o'clock hour coming up next on QAM.